Chapter 11. Flight Through the Hills. At first, Taryn offered to let Elenwy ride Melengar, but the girl refused.
"I can walk as well as any of you," she cried,
so angrily that Taryn made no more of it. He had learned to be wary of the girl's sharp tongue. It was agreed that the White Mare would carry the weapons taken from Spiral Castle except the sword Durnwin, of which Elenwy had appointed herself guardian. Scratching in the dirt with his dagger point, Flutterflam showed Taryn the path he intended to follow.
"The Hoosier of the Horned King will surely stay in the Valley of the Eistrad. It's the easiest way for an army on the march. Spiral Castle is here," he added, with an angry jab to mark the spot, "west of the River Eistrad. Now, the shortest road would be straight north over these hills."
"And that is the one we must take," said Taryn, trying to make sense of Fluter's crisscrossing lines.
"Wouldn't recommend it, my friend. We should be passing a little too near Araman. Aron's strongholds are close to Spiral Castle, and I suggest we keep clear of them. No, what I believe we should do is this. Stay on the high ground of the western bank of the Wystrad. We can't quite go directly, since we need to follow the valley itself. That way, we can avoid both Anarvin and the Horned King. The four of us can move faster than heavily armed warriors. We shall come out well ahead of them, not far from Cair Thul. From there, we make a mad dash for it, and our task is done."
Fluter straightened up a bit, beaming with satisfaction.
"There you have it," he said, wiping the dirt from his dagger. "A brilliant strategy. My own war leader couldn't have arranged it better."
"Yes," said Taryn, his head still muddled with the bard's talk of high ground and western banks. "This sounds very reasonable." They descended to a broad, sun-swept meadow. The morning had turned bright and warm. Dew still clung to bending blades of grass. At the head of the travelers rode Fluter, stepping out briskly in his long, spindly shanks. Harp jogged on his back, his shabby cloak was rolled over his shoulder. Elenwy, hair disheveled by the breeze, the great black sword hung behind her, followed next, with Gurgi immediately after. So many new leaves and twigs had stuck in Gurgi's hair that he began to look like a walking beaver dam. He loped along, swinging his arms, shaking his head from side to side, moaning and muttering. Holding Melengar's bridle, Taryn marched last in line. Except for the weapons lashed to the horse's saddle, these travelers might have been on a spring ramble. Elenwy chattered gaily. Now and then Fluter burst into a snatch of song. Taryn alone was uneasy. To him, the bright morning felt deceptively gentle. Golden trees seemed to cover dark shadows. He shuddered even in the warmth. His heart was troubled, too, as he watched his companions. In Cair Dul Ben, he dreamed of being a hero. But dreaming, he had come to learn, was easy. And at Cair Dul Ben, no lives depended on his judgment. He longed for Gwydion's strength and guidance. His own strength, he feared, was not equal to this task. He turned once for the last look in the direction of Spiral Castle, Gwydion's burial mound. Over the crest, dark against the clouds, rose two figures on horseback. Taryn shouted and gestured for his companions to take cover in the woods. Melengar galloped forward, and in another moment they were all crouching in a thicket. The horsemen followed along the crest, too far away for Taryn to see their faces clearly, but from their rigid postures he could guess that the livid features and the dull eyes of the Cauldronborn.
"How long have they been behind us?" asked Fluter. "Have they seen us?"
Taryn looked cautiously through the screen of leaves. He pointed towards the slope. "There's your answer," he said. From the crest, the pale Cauldronborn warriors turned their horses towards the meadow and were steadily picking their way down the hill.
"Hurry," ordered Taryn. "We must outrun them."
The group did not return to the meadow, but struck out across the woods. The appearance of Cauldronborn now forced them to abandon the path Fluter had chosen, but the bard hoped they might throw the warriors off the track and circle back again to the higher ground. Staying close to one another, they moved at a dog trot, not daring to stop even for water. The forest offered a measure of protection from the sun, but after a time the pace began to tell on them. Only Gurgi did not seem fatigued or uncomfortable. He looked steadily along, and the swarms of midges and stinging insects could not penetrate his matted hair. Elenwy, who proudly insisted she enjoyed running, clung to Melengar's stirrup. Taryn could not be sure how close the warriors were. He knew the Cauldronborn could hardly fail to track them, by sound if nothing else, for they no longer attempted to move silently. Speed was their only hope, and long after nightfall they pressed on. It had become a blind race into the darkness, under a moon drowned in heavy clouds. Invisible branches crashed at them or slashed their faces. Elenwy stumbled once, and Taryn pulled her to her feet. The girl faltered again, her head drooped. Terranen strapped the weapons on Melengar's saddle, shared out the burden with Fluter and Gurgi, and hoisted the protested Elenwy to Melengar's back. She slumped forward, her cheek pressed against the horse's golden mane. All night they struggled through the forest, which grew denser and closer as they approached the Wystrad Valley. By the time the first hesitating light of day appeared, even Gurgi had begun to stumble with fatigue and could barely put one hairy foot in front of the other. Elenwy had fallen into a slumber so deep that Terran feared she was ill. Her hair lay bedraggled and damp upon her forehead. Her face was pallid. With the bard's help, Terran lifted her from the saddle and propped her against a mossy bank. When he ventured to unbuckle the cumbersome sword, Elenwy opened one eye, made an irritated face, and pulled the blade away from him, with more determination than he'd expected.
"You never understand things the first time," Elenwy murmured, her grip firm on the weapon. "But I imagine assistant pig keepers are all alike. I told you you're not to have it, and now I'll have to tell you for the second time. Or is it the third or the fourth? I must have lost count."
So saying, she wrapped her arms around the scabbard and fell back to sleep. "We must rest here," Terran said to the bard, "if only for a little while."
"Not the moment," groaned Fluter, who had stretched a full length with his toes and nose pointing straight into the air. "I don't care who catches me. I'd welcome Aron himself and ask whether he had any breakfast with him."
"The Cauldronborn might have lost track of us during the night," Terran said hopefully, but without great conviction.
"I wish I knew how far we've left them behind, or if we've left them behind at all."
"Huh." Gurgi brightened a little.
"Clever Gurgi will know," he cried, "with seekings and peekings."
In another moment, Gurgi was halfway up a tall pine. He clambered easily to the top and perched there like an enormous crow, scanning the land in the direction they'd traveled. Terran, meanwhile, opened the saddlebags. So little food remained that it was hardly worth dividing. He and Fluter desired to give Elenwy the last of the provisions. Gurgi scented food even at the top of the pine tree, came scuttling down, snuffling eagerly at the prospect of his crunchings and munchings.
"Stop thinking about eating for a moment," Terran cried. "What did you see?"
"Two warriors are far, but Gurgi sees them. Yes, yes, they are riding full of wickedness and fierceness. But there is time for a small crunching," Gurgi pleaded. "Oh, very small for clever, valiant Gurgi."
"There are no more crunchings," said Terran. "If the Cauldronborn are still at her heels, you'd better worry less about food and more about your own skin."
"But Gurgi will find munchings very quickly. Oh, yes, he is wise to get them, to comfort the bellies of great noble lords, and then they will forget poor Gurgi and not even give him snips and snaps for his eatings."
After a hurried discussion with Fluter, who looked about as ravenous as Gurgi, Terran agreed they might take a little time to search for berries and edible roots.
"Quite right," said the bard. "Better eat what we can get now while the Cauldronborn give us a chance to do it. I shall help you. I know all about foraging in the woods. Do it constantly."
Harp tensed one string, so signs of giving away.
"No," he added quickly, "I'd better stay with Elenwy. The truth is, I can't tell a mushroom from a toadstool. Wish I could. It would make the life of a wandering bard considerably more filling."
With cloaks in which to carry back whatever they might find, Terran and Gurgi set off. At a small stream, Terran halted to fill Gwydion's leather water flask. Gurgi, sniffing hungrily, ran ahead and disappeared into a strand of rowans. Near the bank of the stream, Terran discovered mushrooms and gathered them hurriedly. Bent on his own search, he paid little heed to Gurgi, until he suddenly heard anguished yelps from behind the trees. Clutching his precious mushrooms, Terran hastened to see what had happened and came upon Gurgi lying in the middle of the grove, writhing and whimpering, a honeycomb beside him. At first, Terran thought Gurgi had got himself stung by bees. Then, he saw the creature was in more serious trouble. While Gurgi had climbed for his honey, a dead branch had snapped under his weight. He twisted his leg and was pinned to the ground with the heavy wood atop it. Terran heaved the branch away. The panting Gurgi shook his head.
"Poor Gurgi's leg is broken," he moaned. "There will be no more amblings and ramblings for him now."
Terran bent and examined the injury. The leg was not broken, though badly torn, and swelling rapidly.
"Now Gurgi's head must be dropped off," the creature moaned. "Do it, great lord, do it quickly. Gurgi will squeeze up his eyes so he cannot see hurtful slashings."
Terran looked closely at Gurgi. The creature was in earnest. His eyes pleaded with Terran.
"Yes, yes," cried Gurgi. "Now, before silent warriors arrive, Gurgi is better dead at your sword than another in their hands. Gurgi, turn and walk. All will be killed with fearful smitings and bitings. It is better."
"No," said Terran. "You won't be left in the woods. and you won't have your head chopped off, by me or anyone else." For a moment, Terran almost regretted his words. The poor creature was right, he knew. The injury would slow their pace, and Gurgi, like all of them, would be better off dead than in Auron's grasp. Still, Terran could not bring himself to draw his sword. "You and Ellen, we can ride Melengar," said Terran, lifting Gurgi to his feet and putting one of the creature's hairy arms about his shoulder. "Come now, one step at a time." Terran was exhausted when they reached Elmley and the bard. The girl had recovered noticeably and was chattering even faster than before. While Gurgi lay silently on the grass, Terran divided the honeycomb. The portions were pitifully small. Fluter called Terran aside.
"Your hairy friend is going to make things difficult," he said quietly. "If Melengar carries two riders, I don't know how much longer she's going to keep up."
"It's true," said Terran, "yet I see nothing else we can do. Would you abandon him? Would you have cut his head off?"
"Absolutely," cried the bard, "in a flash. A flam never hesitates. Fortunes of war and all that. Oh, drat and blast, there goes another string. A thick one, too."
When Terran went back to rearrange the weapons they would now be obliged to bear, he was surprised to find a large oak leaf on the ground before his cloak. On the leaf lay Gurgi's tiny portion of the honeycomb.
"Oh, great lord," murmured Gurgi. "Gurgi is not hungry for crunchings and munchings today."
Terran looked at the eager face of Gurgi. For the first time, they smiled at one another. "Your gift is generous," said Terran softly. "But you travel as one of us, and you will need all your strength. Keep your share, it is yours by right, and you've more than earned it." He put his head gently on Terran's shoulder. The wet wolfhound odor did not seem as objectionable as before.